Good morning. Thank you for having me. It's great to be back at Asbury. As Dr. Baldwin said, I was the RD of Kresge. It's been about 10 years since I did that. When I first met Jeannie Banter, she was just a newbie freshman, and we got to spend 4 wonderful years together. So I've sat in this auditorium many, many times. So thank you. It's an honor to be back. It's an honor to be with you this morning, and I'm super excited to talk about one of my very favorite topics, relationships and dating within this context, within an evangelical campus context. So spoiler alert, I know this is like Human Sexuality Week, but today, this morning, I'm talking about dating. So please don't be disappointed. But I know, and because students would tell me that, like, they talk about sexuality and all they talk about is relationships. So I'm giving you a spoiler alert. Today, we are going to be talking about dating and relationships. We're going to be talking about same-sex friendships, cross-sex friendships, dating relationships, love relationships, kind of the gamut. So one of the things, I'm a big context person. I like to hear how people get into what they study. So if someone's written a book or done a dissertation on something, they've spent years of their lives thinking and reading and talking about these topics. And so I always like to know kind of, well, how do they get into that? What's the backstory there? I'm a big backstory person. So when people ask me that question, I usually pinpoint my freshman year in college as kind of the beginning of this work in a lot of ways. So I attended an evangelical campus, not unlike Asbury. I went to Lee University in Tennessee, and I am a North Jersey girl. I grew up my whole life in North Jersey. So coming, yeah, what's up, Jersey? I'm still a Jersey girl at heart. I live outside Philly now. I love the Northeast. So it was a big culture shock moving to the South and coming to this evangelical campus. And so I remember setting up my room with my roommate. Our parents had left. I think orientation was kind of over officially, and we were getting our room set up. And this was, I'm very much dating myself. This was way, way before social media. I think literally email was just coming, like a big thing at that time. I still handwrote letters to my friends from high school. So I did not Facebook stalk my roommate before we got to campus. I did not have that opportunity. I think I got a letter with her name and phone number. I don't even think we exchanged a phone call. So after our parents left and we were kind of setting up our room, we were getting to know each other. And she pulls out this picture, and she puts this picture above her bed. And it was from a magazine, and it was a picture of a wedding dress. And so I asked her about it, and she said, oh, well, it's my dream dress. And I thought, oh, okay. I had just turned 18, like the month before. I was very uncertain as to what I thought about marriage for myself. I really wasn't just in that headspace. I definitely had never picked up a bridal magazine at that point, but I thought, okay, you do you, you know, like, that's fine. Move on into the year, and I just moved from Jersey, so I wasn't familiar with a lot of the cultural cues that happen in the South and on an evangelical campus. And so I kept hearing about this MRS degree, and people were making, it was like a joke, but it was a joke I didn't know, which is really funny given what I study now, right? And if I'm really honest with you, I would say I was well into my second year on campus before I really got the joke. I kept thinking it was some form of a master's. I knew about an MBA. I knew about an MS. I knew about an MA, but I really was like racking my brain. Like, I don't know what this degree is, and I can't ask anybody because they all know and I don't. And so finally, like, I figured it out, right? I have two older brothers who always joke, no matter how many degrees I have, they're like, you're slow on the uptake, Dana, and I will give them that. Sometimes I am. But for a lot of people, the MRS degree, like that joke, that stereotype of, like, especially a female student, is kind of the summation. It's like we laugh at that, and it's the summation of what they think about when they think about relationships and dating and evangelical settings. And they're like, ha ha, the MRS degree. For me, when I finally did get the joke and when I finally got it, it was actually the beginning. It was the beginning of this journey for me. I'd always been fascinated with relationships, how they work, how they function, decisions people make in them, why people do what they do. And then I landed on this evangelical campus, which was completely different culture situation than I had been in previously growing up in North Jersey. I went to public schools my whole life. And so for me, the MRS degree joke was just the beginning. I knew there was more to this story. I went on to finish my degree at the school where I was at Lee, and I ended up doing a master's, and I lived in residence life there with students for several years. And then I came here, and I lived in here for several years with students. So I spent 7 years of my life, both as a single person and married, living in with students, having late night conversations in my office, in my apartment, on campus, about relationships, about dating, about friendships. And and as you should. And I did that as a student as well, because that's what you do in college. That is developmentally what you're supposed to do. That is your task in life at this stage, between 18 and 25, is to kind of figure out yourself relationally, who you are independent of your family of origin, and then figure out these relationships. How do you do them, and how do you form them, and what does that look like? And so, so I took this interest that I had, and I took all these experiences that I had, and I was able to turn that into an area of academic study. So when I went on to do my doctoral work, I knew exactly what I wanted to study. I knew I wanted to study relationships within an evangelical, kind of highly religious setting. And that's what I did. And I actually did it right down the road. I did it at University of Kentucky. I had a great experience there, and I was able to bring all of these areas of interest, gender and sexuality and religiosity, into and culture studies into one degree. And I did that. And then I've been fortunate enough to turn that into a book, which brings me here to you today. And so this is what I love to do. I love talking with students about these topics. I love hearing stories. I love when people find out what you study. I mean, even random, like I would hear dating stories from my professors at UK. I mean, they're like, tell me about, you know, they're going through a divorce and then this dating. And then, so I just get these wonderful stories from people, and I love to hear them. So a little bit about this study. I did a qualitative study. So I did a very in-depth look at, I went to two different evangelical campuses. And I basically went in trying to find out what does it look like? What do they do to form their intimate relationships? What is the process? What kinds of practices do they do? What's the rules, spoken and unspoken? What are the rituals? How does the larger campus community and culture play into that? And so what I do in the book is I basically give a very detailed look at two campuses and the culture around relationships. So the relational landscape is what I talk about in the book. And so today we're going to talk about just a very small snippet of that this morning. I'll dive a little bit more into it, especially the gender piece, tonight over dinner. And so that's just a little bit about who I am and the work that I do. So today I want to talk to you about, okay, it's a different clicker, but I got it. So today I want to talk to you about a lens of romantic coupling. This is something that this is a concept that came out of my work. So when I think about relationship, the relational landscape, and when I say that, I mean all relationships, friendships, dating, romance, sexuality. The kind of foundational, I want to talk about some of the foundational pieces to that landscape, the framework that makes this landscape. And it starts with this lens of romantic coupling. What do I mean by that? So basically, what I found at the campuses, and I will say this, so I did a qualitative study. It's not meant to be, you do very in-depth in a few settings. It's not meant to be generalizable to every campus, but just on what I know and what I've heard, I do believe there are threads that will make sense to different campuses, evangelical settings. But everything I say is in relation to my work within the specific campuses that I visited. And I affectionately named them small and large evangelical U. They were very similar. They're very similar to Asbury. They're evangelical schools. Their main difference was in size, and that presented some cultural differences. So I wanted that difference to kind of be remembered throughout. And so I named them based on their size. Not very creative, but there was a reason behind that. And so it's this idea that most, I hesitate to say all, but most, the majority, a lot of the interaction between men and women on campus are seen. This interaction is seen through this window of romantic love. Everything is kind of interpreted, many things, many interactions, most is interpreted through this lens. If we think about putting on glasses, and that's how we see the world, through those lenses, that's kind of the way it is for these schools that I visited. Just seemed like romantic love, romantic coupling kind of overshadowed everything. And so I want to unpack some of the components to that today. So the first thing, and this is this idea circled a lot. Students continually talked about this. I did focus groups with students. I did in-depth individual interviews. I spent hours talking with students in groups and individually about their kind of landscape of the culture on their campus. And they talked about this idea that there's really no casual interactions. Seemingly no. I mean, it might seem, okay, so on the appearance, it might seem like they're casual, but really they're not. They're really not, because they're heavy laden with lots of meaning. So where everything means something. And the idea that casual dating is very taboo. This idea that you would casually go out with people of the opposite sex, whether that's with a romantic interest in mind or just to get to know them, is very taboo. It's just kind of, you don't do that. And so every interaction seems to come with a significant meaning. Not always, and the thing that's important here is not always from the people within the interaction. A lot of times that meaning is coming from people around the interaction, so the larger community and what the meaning they're putting onto what's happening between students. So dating, in a sense, is this. It's not to get to know someone. It's not like, hey, I don't know you. I want to get to know you. No. Dating is very much intentional. It's very serious. It's about finding the one. And I'm not saying right now, I'm not saying that's a problem, but I am going to kind of unpack this a little bit. And we're going to look at some of the implications of some of these cultural components that that I found. So I want to introduce you to. So today we're going to spend a lot of time hearing from students that I spoke with. So school names are changed, students' names are changed, identifying information has changed, so just know that. So we're going to talk to Alan. Alan was a senior at Large Evangelical U, and he was involved in leadership on campus. And this is what he had to say when we were talking about this idea. He said, I use the abbreviation LEU. So the LEU culture says, oh, there's no friend stage. You automatically have it in your head that we know you guys want to get together. There's nothing platonic. Okay, so that's how he described it to me. And he had been at his school the whole time, and he had, between the time I talked to him in the focus group and the time we were talking in the interview, he had just started dating someone seriously. And this was an idea that really resonated with him that he talked a lot about. And then I want to share with you what some of the students from Large Evangelical U and the focus group, what they had to say. So Emily and Haley and Lisa, we'll hear from them. They're all seniors. And then Brian was in this mix as well, and he was a junior. Brian, and we're going to hear more from Brian later. He's a bit of a wild card. You don't hear it so much here, but he just felt free to. It was a really fun group. He just felt free to say whatever he thought. I mean, he just put it out there, and everybody welcomed it, and they would challenge him, and we were laughing, and it was just a great dialogue. So we'll hear from them here. And I will say before I put this up, there's a little bit of language, and I changed some of it, but I tried to keep some of it to the sincerity of what students were saying. So there's a little bit of harsh language here. I hope you'll take it in the context that it's being delivered. So Emily says, like, there's no such thing as dating around. Haley says, oh, no. Emily says, like, you can't go on dates with multiple people. Haley, no. Emily says, because that would be seen as, oh, well, she's a slut. Brian says, or he's a player. Haley says, yeah. Emily agrees, yeah, but it's not that at all. It's just that, you're going out on a date, like trying to, not necessarily trying to find someone, but and Haley says, just hanging out. And Emily says, yeah, just hanging out with someone. It's not necessarily like, oh, well, I'm interested in her. It's not like that. It bothers me that a lot of people don't understand what dating around means. They mistake it for being, and Lisa jumps in, slutty. Emily says, yeah, slutty, for lack of a better word. Let me go back one. So you hear in this quote, this idea that they're really lamenting the idea that this is a very misunderstood concept on their campus. So dating around has a very negative connotation, right? And we heard some of that's really strong language, and I actually changed some of that language to make it a little softer. But the idea of being slutty or being a player, I mean, these are really strong labels that say more than just, they're saying things more than just about the relationship or the interaction. These are labels on people. These are judgments that are being made about people and from afar. So, they don't necessarily know what's happening, but just the appearance of what it looks like, they're getting this label, right? And it's about the interaction, and it's about them as people. And I think that this is not surprising to you, that what you do socially, what you do relationally on campus, speaks very strong volumes about what people think about you spiritually. Like, let's just put that out there, right? For good or bad, that is the case. So these labels are really impactful. They really impact how people view you and how you're seen on campus. And for a lot of students that I talked with, how they internalize and see themselves. It seems like it can seem fairly benign, like, oh yeah, that's just how it is. But like, if we really think about it and we really unpack that, it's significant. I want to move on. Oh, I'm sorry. I think this clicker is different than my other one. All right, I got to move forward. So when we talk about, so this other idea that I want to talk about, this other component of this lens of romantic coupling, is this seen twice together rule. I don't think it's, yeah, you're laughing already. You know what this is, right? I don't even have to explain it to you. You know it. So I'm not going to explain it to you. So I'm going to let Jane. Jane was a senior at Small Evangelical U. She had been at her campus the whole 4 years. And so Jane, in a lot of ways, I got to speak with so many different kinds of students, and I love that. Students from all different walks of life. Jane was, if I had to say, there was a student who kind of embodied that stereotype in a way of like the MRS degree, it was Jane. I mean, she admittedly said, I came to campus to find a husband. Like she said to me, it's easier to catch a fish in a barrel than in the ocean. And I thought, okay, I'll take it. I'll take it. That was her. She had come from a very, you know, she made no apologies about it. She wanted to find a Christian man to marry. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. That was who she was. It was what she was. I don't think that was her whole reason for coming, but that was part of it, right? And so she admittedly said that. Unfortunately for Jane, she had been unlucky in love. And I talked to her. at that point, I was talking to her in October of her senior year, and she was not in a relationship. She had not been able to kind of secure this. She had a crush on a guy for like the whole 4 years. And that's a really fun narrative that I'm going to unpack tonight. If you'll get to hear more from Jane. But anyway, so I don't know how the rest of her year panned out. But at that point, she was lamenting that. So that's a little bit about Jane. So this is what Jane said. She said, and like how they were talking about, there's no middle ground between friendship and dating. Even to the point where you see someone eating in the cafeteria and it's just two of them. Oh my gosh, they're dating. That happened to a friend of mine. Two of my girlfriend and a guy friend of mine, they're just totally friends and people thought they were dating. Like six different people thought they were dating. And again, this is coming from someone who admittedly came to find, you know, she's like, she wanted to find someone. She wasn't interested in dating around. She wanted to find the one. That's what she really wanted to. And she would, you know, talk to me about that. She was working through that. But even someone who, you know, this wasn't somebody who critiqued the culture. She embraced that culture. This was part of what she embraced. And so she recognized that that there's this no middle ground between friendship and dating. There's no friend stage. There's nothing platonic. Think about what Alan said. And so we're gonna kind of dive into that a little bit more too. So I want to keep moving forward. So it's also a part of this lens of romantic coupling. There's lots of assumptions swirling, as we heard in that quote, right? So this couple, this dyad, I call them a dyad, right? Because I don't know if they're actually a couple, this man and this woman. So they're just on campus and people are like, oh, you're dating. So there's just a lot of assumptions swirling, assumptions about dating. Let's think about this like a slippery slope. If someone's dating on an evangelical campus, what do you then assume? You know, they're going to get married, right? We all, like, that's just the next step assumption is they're going to get married. And so there's a lot of assumptions swirling around the relational scene. So marriage is kind of this impending. It was the first thing everyone, kind of like this dead silence when I sat down with students in the first focus groups to talk to them. And then nobody wanted to say it. And then everybody blurted it out and everybody laughed and it was really funny. But marriage is this thing that's swirling. And so dating is along with that. So we assume you're dating. If you're dating, we kind of assume you're going to get married, right? So it seems like this, it seems bizarre to even say it, right? And we all know, and students could recognize this is crazy in one sense, or right, like not crazy, but it's unique that this is the way it is. And they kind of know it's not this, but yet this is what the culture is. So it's like, on one sense, it's like this, you know, you're just going to the bistro to get a snack with a friend. And the next thing you know, by tomorrow, you know, everyone's got you dating and five steps from the altar, right? Like it kind of seems like, whoa, what happened? I was just hungry after my game. Like, but we know like it's not really that, but then it is. Right? But then that is part of the culture that is still there. I mean, students talked about this so much. And so cross-sex friends, men and women who are friends, almost need to like, I think of it like, almost like you need to carry a sign. We're just friends. And students would talk to me about that. This one woman shared how she's very good friends with this gentleman, this guy, her friend. And she said, we go out, we have to be like, okay, everybody, don't freak out. We're just friends. Like they had to like announce it all the time. Like we're just friends. But even when they do that, then like their community didn't believe them, right? They still, because this romantic coupling idea is so strong, they didn't really believe them. They were like, oh yeah, okay, wink, wink, right? Like, I getcha, you're just friends, wink, wink. And they really were just friends. They were just trying to have a friendship. And so it's really difficult. It was really difficult for men and women to be friends on campus and that slippery slope of assumptions. So as I was kind of getting into this, I thought, well, who cares, right? Like, who cares what people think? Like, you know what you're doing. You know what's true and what's not true. Who cares what everybody else is saying? But it does matter. I mean, we can all say we don't care what other people think, but on some level, you know, we do. And it matters when you're in a close community. It does matter what people think. And so as I unpacked this a little bit more in the research, it led me to this next idea that relationships are like parking tickets. So I talk about relationships like parking tickets. So a parking ticket, it's not a major moving violation, right? So it's not like that big of a deal. But they, you know, they do add up, and they can count. They do count against your record if they, you know, if they start adding up. So you don't want too many parking tickets on your record, right? Even though it's just a parking ticket, you don't want too many on there. And so relationships are kind of the same way. And the interesting thing is, it's not just the official relationship. It's not even like the Facebook official relationship where you finally make it to dating, right? Boyfriend, girlfriend status. And I'm going to talk about that process of what actually happens between that tonight. I'm going to talk about that, and I'm going to unpack the gender piece in the middle of how gender plays out in that process tonight at over dinner. But when you finally reach that, like, we're Facebook official, we're boyfriend, girlfriend, it's not just those relationships that count against you. It's expressing any level. It's even if people think you're interested, any even expression of interest kind of is like a notch against you. Like, boom, that counts against you in a way. And so you don't want to have too many on there because, again, it makes you look bad. People think you're a player. They think you're being slutty. They think you're being loose with your affections. And I'm not saying you need to just throw that around. I understand the idea of kind of guarding your heart. I understand that. But there's also like this extreme that I think is happening where there's just no room. There's very limited room to just even explore healthy friendships without all of these assumptions swirling and all of these ideas swirling and labels swirling. And so I was on a campus last month and I was talking about this idea and I did a morning session. And at the last campus I visited, I did more with faculty and staff. So I did a session in the morning with all of their student life staff. And then they invited all their campus student leaders. And so I did that. And then I did a lunch session, kind of like what I'm doing here. And there was a gentleman, a student, who came to the morning session, and then over lunch he shared. And he said, we were talking about this idea of relationships like parking tickets. And he said, it's not just relationships. He said, even asking a girl out is like that. Like, so you've done one and it kind of whoop counts against you. And so then he said that, and everyone in the room was kind of like, oh. And then after lunch, when I was eating, I got to eat after, he came up to me and came up to my table. And this is what I love. I get to hear these wonderful stories. So he shared the story of what just happened to him that week. And so he had asked this woman out, this student on campus. So he was kind of interested. He had heard that she thought he was cute. So I think he kind of felt like, hey, I got the green light. Probably going to get a yes, right? So he asked her out. She did say yes. They made plans for the weekend. And then like midweek, she texted him or something and said, I can't go. I have to cancel on you. Like, I can't go. I don't think this is going to work out or something, whatever she said. And he was like, well, why? He was confused. He's like, didn't understand. He's like, well, why? And so then she said, I had already made plans with someone else that weekend, and it will look really bad for me if I go out with two guys in the same weekend. So she canceled. And he was really bummed. I mean, I think he genuinely was interested in her. And then, but he was also bummed because he said, now I have to wait 2 months before I ask another girl out. So it's almost like, so a notch against you, and now I've got to have this buffer zone, right? To like clear my record so everybody doesn't think I'm just being loose with my asking girls out kind of idea. I'm not being seen as a player. I'm not getting a bad rap on campus. And so because that matters, right? That his dateability, his sociability, his status on campus socially, which is going to affect his dating, his dateability. I mean, you know, I heard all the stories about how, you know, everybody's, they're background checking on Facebook. They're doing, who knows who's been interested in who. And I mean, especially in small campuses, you know how all that goes. And there's a lot of pressure around that. And so it all goes back to that idea of these labels, this idea of not wanting to appear as a player or as a slutty, and how everybody's interpreting that. And should we be interpreting it that way is the question. So let's think about, where does this come from? So people, how does this idea like get perpetuated? So I want to introduce this idea. It's called sentimental education. So I'm going to speed up here a little bit. I tend to talk for a while. So There is an educational anthropologist, that's a thing, out of Columbia's Teachers College. And she writes on, she does anthropology, and she does that within the context of educational settings. And so in her work, she writes about this idea of sentimental education. And so she basically found, I think she lived in the residence halls for a while, and she found that college women instruct each other as to how to do their friendships and love relationships, how to conduct their friendships and love relationships in everyday interactions. So just through interacting every day with their friends, this is kind of what's happening, this sentimental education. So I also found similar ideas to this. This work is fairly recent. And then, you know, there's some seminal work on college campuses and relationships from like 50 years ago, some seminal research, and they found the same thing. Peer culture is a huge piece of the relational scene on campus. So in my book and in my work, I actually do a lot of analysis of how the larger community affects. So how does the institution as a whole, by way of rules and policies, I even do kind of like a geographic, like a spatial analysis of how campus buildings are set up and the policies around campus buildings. How do all of these factors play into the relational scene on campus? And it does, they all do, but the peer culture is really, really, really important. That's where it comes down to on the ground, right? The sentimental education. You guys have peer educators here, I know you do, and most campuses do. So this is like your informal peer education right here that's happening around relationships. So I wanna share a quote with you from Jenny. Jenny was a senior at Small Evangelical U when I talked with her. She had been in leadership on campus. She was very well, she was very familiar with her campus and the culture. And so she said this to me in our interview. She said, after your freshman year, you learn that's unacceptable at SEU. Like when I went on dates with a few guys just to hang out and to get to know them. And then I was told, Jenny, it's looking pretty bad. So I quit. And I know other people had the same experience. And so then I asked her, and they said, Jenny, it's looking bad. Looking bad how? You kind of have to play dumb to get people to explain things. I kind of knew what she meant. But she said, I just got called a slut just because I was going on dates with guys, but I wasn't doing anything. I would just go out to eat, let them pay. I would go to the movies, let them pay. And apparently that just looked bad. We could do a whole session on the whole like dating exchange with money and all that stuff. And there's books about that. It's very fascinating, but we won't get into that today. But it was a date. It was a kind of like a formal date. I don't think it was a date in the sense of like, I'm super interested in you. She had just arrived on campus and she was just trying to get to know some folks. And other people in the room echoed the same idea. Yes, that happened to me. Because what happens is you come from where you're from, right? And it may be, so your own hometown, your own state, you may be from a totally different part of the country and things are done differently. And then you come to like an evangelical campus and it's just totally different. That happened to me sitting there my freshman year trying to figure out where I'd landed and what's the new norm, like what's happening. That's a prime example of peer sentimental education from peers. And I will say that we didn't unpack this too much together, but I would assume her friends were probably trying to help her out, right? Trying to be like, hey, it's looking bad. You might want to like not do that. But the question is, why? Why is it so? Because it becomes to this extreme, like, right? In the extreme form, it's unhealthy that you can't even be friends without all of this stuff being assumed about you and really strong accusations and assumptions. This clicker goes the wrong way. So a lot of chapels, a lot of chapel speakers that I had when I was a student and that I heard, a lot of times when you get to the relationship chapel or the sex chapel or whatever, you know, there's kind of that like, why isn't there more dating happening on campus? What's going on? And then they would get onto the guys. Guys, step up. What's happening? So I'm not going to do that to you today. So my question was always, well, let's understand what this whole dynamic and what's happening. And so I feel like I have some piece of the answer to why there isn't more dating. And maybe you don't feel that way on your campus. I don't know. Maybe you think there's sufficient dating happening. But this is my assertion from what I found, that this casual dating is taboo. I mean, taboo is a strong word. Like, it's really looked down upon. You really can get yourself in a bad spot socially. People will think very not kind things about you socially, personally. They'll assume things about you spiritually. there's these assumptions about marriage swirling, right? You're like, hey, I just got to college. I don't know that I'm like ready to walk down the aisle. I just want to get a snack with somebody, right? It's like, let's back off that just a little bit. And then this idea that there's limited space. And in the book I talk about this, there's literally limited space on a lot of campuses and figuratively limited space for men and women to genuinely be friends. So these factors, through this lens of romantic coupling, in my estimation, my assertion is they all impede, they all hinder actual like healthy male-female relationships, whether that's dating or friendships, just a genuine friendship. It actually hinders that. And so I want to show you a few examples of how that played out in very real lives of students that I talked to. So I told you I was going to bring Brian back up. So Brian was just so much fun. He just made that focus group. We just laughed. We had a great time. And so I'm going to do my best. I'm going to take a sip of water to recreate the scene in the room that day with Brian, because I kind of have to be different voices jumping in. But I think you'll hear it yourself. So Brian says, if I can get this to click forward. Brian says, one time I was talking to this girl that I really liked, but I was also hanging out with her friend because we played music together. The girls jump on him. Haley's like, oh, that's a no. Valerie's like, no. I mean, I have dot, 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 because he literally doesn't even have the word out of his mouth, and they are jumping on him like, oh, no, 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 no. Like, they know, dude, you've broken a rule. Like, this is not going to be good. This is a debacle from the beginning. And so he's like, no, 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 wait a second. And the whole group is laughing now. We're just all laughing because we know, like, this isn't how you do it, dude. He says, we were not. She wasn't that interested. We just hung out and they were friends. But it was during the day and we would go play music and she knew about it. And then everybody was like, so which one? Like, they thought I liked both of them. And I was trying to play them or something. And really, I was just playing music with her because we were all friends, and then I liked her, and then it complicated the whole situation, and I ended up not dating the girl because she thought I was like, had these ulterior motives, and like, it was crazy. So you hear, like I said, the words floating out there, they jump on him, no, 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 and he's like, no, wait, please, let me explain. I know this sounds bad, but it really wasn't. And so if we can kind of take a step back and think about that, like, he's probably in this group of friends, they're all getting to, which is how it happens, right? This happens in a group of friends. So then he develops this interest in one friend, but then he plays music and this other woman plays music. So they end up playing music together, and it's like, they can't do that. This is what I want you to hear. So Brian's story is a prime example of how if there's interest in one person, I mean, that was like just the slightest bit of interest. They weren't even like technically dating. He was just kind of interested in her. It almost has to be to the exclusion of everyone else of the opposite sex. It's like, I can't talk to anybody else. I can't show any attention. I can't walk out on campus with anybody else if I think that I might like this person. That's not healthy. It really isn't. There's so much value to cross-sex friendships, to being in various friendships. There's so much you can learn, and especially in a setting like a college campus, your college years. This is the only time, well, most likely, the only time in your life where you're really going to live this closely with so many of your peers. And it's such a shame to think that you don't have the freedom to really get to know different people. This is such tenuous ground for students to walk when it comes to navigating relationships. So while it's a funny story, and it was, and we all laughed, when we really break it down and think about it, it's a sad story. And he was bummed. And so I bet he stopped playing music with the one woman and nothing ever developed with the other woman. And he got a bad rap in the process. So my assertion is it hinders relationships from developing. And then my other assertion is that it hinders friendships. And students very clearly talk to me about how that happens. So so the one focus group I did, so I'll just say this real quickly before I put the quote up there. So the focus groups were not divided by by sex. Like, it wasn't like male and female focus groups. I just did it based on time. But the one campus at Small Evangelical U, it just kind of worked out that literally I had an all male group with one woman, and then I had an all female group just based on the way that they signed up for times. And just must have been meant to be that way. So this is taken from the female. This ended up being all females in the room talking about this idea. And so we hear from Amanda, and she says, and this is in the group setting, and other women agreed with her. She said, "I think if the girl is really interested in finding a husband, I think that she will not look for a guy just as a friend, or she would try to keep guys that she would normally just become friends with a little further away." And everyone in the room agreed, and they said this idea of being taken, and I got to speed up here, this idea of being taken surfaced. So the idea that if, like, you know, a woman's hanging out with a guy, even as just friends, like if they're just seen together, you know, is that, oh, she's taken, and so then other people won't maybe express interest or pursue her in any way because they think she's taken. So it's this idea of, like, it's like friendship has to be exclusive. Like, it's just this very strong exclusivity of, like just tunnel vision of, like, it's just one person and I can't be friends or be with anybody else. I mean, and I know, like, it may look like it's not happening that way, but that's how it feels. That's how these students are describing it to me. That's their perception. And we see how it kind of has blown up in some people's faces. And so I just want to review real briefly that this is what I found was this is a very, I'm not using my clicker now. It's a very high stakes relational culture. That's the way I describe it. It's very high stakes. It's high stakes relationally. It's high stakes spiritually, because what we talked about, what you do relationally has very direct implications for what people think about you spiritually. And that's intense. It's where your spiritual status, your social status, and thereby your dateability kind of hangs in the balance with every interaction. So that's why it does matter what people think, because people are talking, they're saying things, they're putting labels, where anything means something, where the simplest of interaction has all this meaning attached to it, where assumptions fly and those assumptions shape how relationships are happening. There's a lot of benefit to cross-sex friendships, to men and women being able to be friends. Perhaps a serious dating relationship isn't something you're interested in, but you want to have friends with guys, or you want to be friends with women. You can learn so much about what you might like in a potential partner one day when you're ready for that through your friendships. There's so much richness that can be that can come from those relationships. And then there's some questions to consider. And then I know I got to go. But my main thing for you guys today is just to think about the comments that you make and the commentary that you're offering around other people's relationships. And can you hold space for men and women to be friends?